Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Jarl and Pamela Mohn, thanking the people who make public radio great every day and also those who listen.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
I think we have to acknowledge reality. The public is done with masking. If you're not going to wear an N95 respirator, most of the other kinds of masks that you have, the surgical masks, the cloth masks, are really very ineffective.
What you need to know about the latest wave of COVID. It's Friday, January 5th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, Iowa, January 6th, and the contours of the presidential election shaping up for later this year. Also, move over Smokey Bear. Some people say it's time for a new Forest Service mascot. One of the most successful public service announcements in history is turning 80 years old. But there's a campaign underway to come up with an alternative message for fire safety and an alternative messenger.
So we have Torchy the Tule Elk, we have Flame the Fox, we have Cinder the Coyote, and a couple of others. And what we're doing right now is we really want to get the public's help in voting for a good fire mascot.
More about that cast of characters in about 15 minutes. But first, you probably know someone who has COVID right now, or who has had it in the past few weeks. Maybe you know a lot of people who've had it. We're in the midst of another wave of cases coinciding with the holidays and the emergence of a new variant. So we called up Dr. Michael Osterholm for an update. He's the director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. And here's his conversation with Scott Tong.
This variant JN1 quickly has become the dominant strain in this country, and globally it's surging too, according to the World Health Organization. How dangerous is it?
Well, it's very clear that there's a lot of transmission of the virus throughout the world right now. We've pretty much dismantled our system for collecting case data or information on people who test positive. So the next best thing we can do is say, well, our personal experiences, we all know a lot of people who are infected right now. More specifically, though, if we look at severe illnesses and look at hospitalizations, it is good news in the sense that while we're seeing about 30,000 new hospital admissions each week for it, that's way below what it was a year ago at about 40,000 or 2 years ago at the same time at 61,000. Now, that still means, however, though, that we're losing almost 200 people a day in this country who are dying from it. So it's still a challenge, but fortunately not what we have seen in the previous 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. So I do want to ask you about practical steps people can take. You mentioned being updated with vaccines, which could help with this variant. How about testing? A lot of people now get something, get some symptoms and think, you know, it may not be COVID. It may be a cold. Do you suggest people test perhaps more often than before?
Yeah, the challenge we have with testing is that, first of all, just finding tests today is a difficult situation. And although you can still get free tests from the U.S. government, sometimes that's been a challenge to get them. Number two is the fact that you can actually be symptomatic and potentially infectious before you actually turn test positive. And that may be only several days, but in fact, if I'm now going to a family event tonight and I want to test myself, surely that's a good thing to do, but it's not a guarantee that you are not infected and potentially infectious. So I still urge that people, particularly when they're going into settings where they themselves may be the risk factor for somebody who's older, who has immune compromise, picking up the virus from me, I don't want that to happen, so I still do test. I think the other thing just to continue to recommend is get this new dose of vaccine. If you haven't gotten it yet, get it. It can surely have a big impact on protecting you against serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths.
Yeah. And what about masking? My goodness, walking around, most people seem to have given up on masking.
Yeah.
What do you suggest?
Well, using high-quality masking, the N95 respirator tightly fitted to your face still is a very important tool that can protect me from getting infected if I wear it, or if I wear it and I'm infected, from me transmitting it to others. But I think we have to acknowledge reality. The public is done with masking. You know, it's a rare sight today to see anybody who has on an N95 respirator. I would say if you're not going to wear an N95 respirator, then, you know, most of the other kinds of masks that you have, the surgical masks, the cloth masks, are really very ineffective in stopping the virus from being transmitted by you or you getting infected while wearing the mask. And so to me, it's like fixing three of the five screen doors out of your submarine, you know, with that kind of masking.
Yeah.
So I would definitely do it if I was at high risk today for serious illness. And I were going to be in a public setting, yes, I strongly urge you consider using your N95 respirator.
Yeah. And remind us what we should do if we test positive. The CDC still says to isolate, stay away from people for 5 days. Is that right?
Well, it is. And unfortunately, that's a residual recommendation from the days of Omicron back in 2022. CDC took the recommendation from 10 days to 5 days, but there was a caveat that said you should be wearing an N95 respirator then for the other 5 days if you're well enough to work and can work. That just got shortened in the convenience of many people's minds to say just 5 days. Mm. But in fact, from studies we have conducted, we can show that about 70% of people are still infectious between day 5 and day 10. And so to be cautious, say, you know, really 10 days is the period. And if you're able to get up and out and about at 5 days, please at least wear an N95 respirator.
Dr. Michael Osterholm directs the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Osterholm, thanks as always.
Thank you. Great to be with you again.
Coming up next, Scott and Peter O'Dowd convene our first politics roundtable of this election year with some updates on the Republicans campaigning in Iowa and what it heralds for the rest of the year. Stick around.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. It's called protein degradation, and if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. More at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at RosettaStone.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
Tomorrow is the third anniversary of the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol. What happened that day has become one of the defining issues of this year's presidential campaign. President Biden will argue in a speech today that former President Trump remains a threat to democracy for trying to overturn the election results 3 years ago. Meanwhile, Trump campaigns in Iowa today. He still calls January 6th a beautiful day and says that Biden is the threat to democracy for the Justice Department's effort to prosecute him for his role in that insurrection.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us. Sahil Kapoor is Senior National Political Reporter for NBC News. Sahil, welcome back.
Hey, great to be back.
And Isaac Arnsdorf is National Political Reporter for The Washington Post. His forthcoming book is Finish What We Started, about the MAGA movement since January 6th. Isaac, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start, Isaac, by talking about President Biden and what his strategy will be today. He's going to speak near Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, where, of course, George Washington and his army spent an awfully tough winter in 1777 during the Revolutionary War. What do you expect?
Yes, and the weather strikes again. The speech was supposed to be tomorrow on the anniversary, but they had to move it up. Biden, you know, the campaign just put up its first ad this year, quoting from a speech that Biden gave last September in Arizona, talking about the Trump and the MAGA movement and what he was calling their extremism and the threat that the ongoing threat they're posing to democracy. And so they're really setting, we expect to hear more along those lines today. And the Biden campaign is really setting this up to be their framing of the campaign in a rematch with Trump, as it looks like it's going to be. And that would be a choice, they're saying, between democracy and authoritarianism, between freedom and repression. And the Democrats used that message, they think, very effectively in last year's midterms to a surprising result where they really outperformed expectations. Mm. And the Biden campaign is betting that when that's the choice that you put in front of voters, they're going to choose democracy.
In fact, we have some sound from that ad. Let's listen.
I believe in free and fair elections and the right to vote fairly and have your vote counted. There's something dangerous happening in America. There's an extremist movement that does not share the basic beliefs in our democracy.
Sahil, what do you think? Is it a risk or an advantage for Biden to push that message when Trump himself has actually gained strength with Republicans over his January 6th related indictments?
Well, it's certainly an advantage on net for President Biden to use the issue of democracy because it does appeal to a lot of voters. It fires up the Democratic base, and it appeals to a lot of swing voters, especially former Republicans who have drifted away from the party in the wake of Trump's rise. And we saw, and I think the Biden campaign cites this all the time as a proof point, the 2022 midterms as an example of how focusing on that issue can be helpful. There are a lot of nominally Republican voters who would have supported GOP candidates in a normal midterm year where Democrats had the White House but were too turned off by what they perceived as extremism within the Republican Party. And our recent NBC poll showed that among single-issue voters, and this was a November 2023 poll, among single-issue voters, protecting democracy or constitutional rights was the number one issue, just ahead of abortion even. So there's no doubt that this is an advantage for Biden and for Democrats, especially because in the 2022 exit polls, we found that 68% of the country thinks democracy is not secure, that it's threatened, and those voters prefer Democrats by a larger margin than the smaller group of people who believe that it's secure did, who supported Republicans. So let's say it's an advantage, but it's certainly not enough, because young voters in particular, Black voters, Hispanic voters, progressive voters, they want to hear more from Biden. The democracy message is unlikely to be sufficient for them. They want to see an agenda, a vision, something to kind of believe that the next 4 years will be better in order to vote for him.
President Trump still calls January 6th a beautiful day, but a member of the far-right Proud Boys was sentenced this week to 10 years in prison for assaulting three police officers January 6th, and he told the court, if I could go back in time, I would change many things about that horrible day. So 3 years later, is there more or less concern that an effort to overturn an election could happen again?
Well, there's certainly no remorse from Donald Trump about that day. He has leaned further and further into what happened. He has defended a lot of the people who marched and who rioted, frankly, on that day, in part because he continues to insist that the election was stolen from him, which we know isn't true. There's no evidence for that. And the courts have thrown out his many, many claims to that effect. But Trump has leaned further into this. It's become a way for him to rally his staunchest supporters. And there is a slice of the country somewhere between, 30 and the high 30s of a percent of the country who believes him that the election of 2020 was somehow tainted. So this is a base play for him. It does not appeal to swing voters. It does not appeal to a majority of the country. But it seems like this is the one of the issues that he expects to ride to the Republican nomination, with which he's currently in a dominant position to win mm-hmm. for 2024.
Yeah, and Isaac, I mean, your book has you following MAGA voters since January 6th. Tell us about the title, Finished What We Started. What does that mean in the context of this election 2024?
Well, it comes from a Trump speech, and it's the way that he is framing the campaign explicitly, as the word he uses is retribution. This idea that the election and the presidency was stolen from them, they need to take it back and finish all the thing. Punish the people who, first of all, the people who they say took it away, and also then. Complete the process of transforming the country that began with Trump's 2016 campaign and his first presidency. Listening to Sahil, the Washington Post released poll results this week where we went back and asked the same questions that we did 2 years ago about January 6th. And what was striking was how much Republicans have split off from the rest of the country. You know, the rest of the country, mm-hmm. when you ask them, was January 6th mostly violent? Was the election legitimate? Was Trump responsible? Democrats and independents haven't really changed that much, but there has been this huge shift among Republicans where those beliefs have intensified, even to the point that a third of Republicans said that they believed that it was definite or probable that the FBI instigated January 6th, wow. which we know is not what happened.
That's certainly not what happened. Isaac, does that seem high to you? I mean, after all this reporting that you've done?
Well, it's a different, there's also been a lot of reporting in right-wing media. Tucker Carlson was a very prominent mouthpiece for this and promoting pro-Trump writers who have been circulating allegations that went on to be validated by members of Congress and eventually Trump himself. If you look back to how isolated Trump was within the Republican Party when he left office, for him to get back to the dominant polling position that he's in would require those attitudes toward January 6th to shift as well. You know, that really goes hand in hand in terms of the party coming back to Trump and the party accepting and normalizing and minimizing the attack on the Capitol.
Well, and speaking of the polls, let's talk about Trump's Republican rivals as we are just 10 days away now from the Iowa caucuses. Here's Ron DeSantis on a CNN town hall last night.
The Democrats want Trump to be the candidate. They are going to talk about all the legal stuff, January 6th. That will be what the election will be about. You don't want it to be a referendum on Trump and the past. You want it to be a referendum on Biden's failures.
DeSantis and Nikki Haley, another rival, still don't really talk much about January 6th. Sahil, why? Why is that?
Well, because their voters believe Trump. They believe Donald Trump's false narrative that the election was stolen from him. And that's the very awkward kind of fine line that candidates like Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis to a greater degree, are trying to walk in trying to win over that large section of the Republican Party base that, you know, may not be hardcore, you know, Trump supporters. They may be open to another candidate, but they certainly believe him about January 6th. And For someone like Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis to beat him, they have to win over all the Republicans who don't accept Trump's inaccurate narrative about January 6th and win some who do. And that's why you see some of them flailing. You know, there's no clear message that they've been able to stick with. Neither of them have had meaningful success, other than you could say Nikki Haley lately in New Hampshire at peeling off a large share of Republicans away from Trump. They've really struggled to settle on a message that resonates, that pulls Republicans off Trump. And look, you can date this back, and I would trace this back to February 13th, 2021, the day the Senate acquitted Donald Trump in the January 6th impeachment trial on incitement of insurrection. Mm. 43 Republicans decided that he should be exonerated. That was the moment the Republicans decided we're not making a break from Trump, and they've never been able to change their mind since.
Isaac, going into the Iowa caucuses, what are you watching for? Any possible surprise?
If Haley were to actually pull out a second place finish, that would really increase her case for consolidating the opposition to Trump within the party going into New Hampshire.
10 days away. Isaac Arnsdorf, national political reporter for The Washington Post, and Sahil Kapoor, senior national political reporter for NBC News. We appreciate you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take one more short break, but when we return...
Only you can prevent forest and woods fires.
If you've ever been to a national park or a forest, you probably know Smokey the Bear. Technically, Smokey Bear, not the. But either way, he's been a fixture of the U.S. Forest Service for decades. But some say it's high time to replace him with a new mascot whose message on fire safety better reflects the times. Peter has more after this.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, the automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy explains how Betterment's technology helps investors better understand and save on taxes.
So taxes are a real cost of investing, as are fees. Understanding your after-tax, after-fee returns is really what's important for investors. An example would be when you buy and sell securities frequently, you can pay a lot of taxes because short-term capital gains, meaning I bought it and I sold it fairly quickly, have higher taxes than long-term capital gains. Our technology in particular will tell you what the tax implication of a particular move you'd like to make is going to be before you make that move so that you're making it with full transparency.
Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for NPR and the following message come from the Lemelson Foundation, dedicated to improving lives through invention, innovation, and climate action.
This year marks an important anniversary.
Only you can prevent forest and woods fires.
Smokey the Bear, Smokey the Bear, prowling and a growling and a sniffing the air.
An old friend of the U.S. Forest Service, Smokey Bear, turns 80 years old. Smokey still cuts a fine figure in his blue jeans and rakish Ranger's hat. And his premise that you can prevent wildfires is the longest running public service announcement in American history. But our next guest says the old bear needs a makeover, one that captures a different view of fire and the role that it has in our future. Emily Schlickman is an assistant professor of landscape architecture and environmental design at the University of California, Davis, and she joins us now. Emily, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And look at you, picking a fight with Smokey Bear. Why? What's wrong with the idea that only you can prevent wildfires?
I think my colleague Brett Milligan and I at UC Davis, we definitely agree that his message is still valid. We just wonder if Smokey could use a new friend to really support all of the efforts of Good Fire.
And you and Brett have come up with a cast of new characters or new friends for Smokey as part of an exhibit that you're doing at the University of California, Davis. One of them is Bernie the Bobcat, who I see is already on a billboard in California. Tell me about Bernie.
Yeah. So Brett and I have been working on, you know, this topic of wildfire for a few years now. And we recently put together a book called Designed by Fire. And with this work, we began thinking about how to get more public buy-in for Good Fire. And by Good Fire, I mean intentionally burning landscapes or simply letting them burn to maintain healthy ecosystems, to build wildfire resilience, and to support native cultural practices. And so in doing this, we thought by giving Smokey a new friend, perhaps that could be one way to get buy-in. But perhaps this new friend could light fires instead of fighting them. So we came up with, we brainstormed a whole cast of what we call kind of pyrophilic characters who could promote good fire. And one example is Bernie the Bobcat. So bobcats like to prey on animals who are attracted to post-fire shrublands. So they inherently benefit from fire. So with this information, we created Bernie. We dressed her up in prescribed fire gear, and we put her up on a billboard outside of Sacramento. But we're also considering a host of other characters. So we have Torchy the Thule Elk. We have Flame the Fox. We have Cinder the Coyote and a couple of others. And what we're doing right now is we really want to get the public's help in voting for a good fire mascot. And the hope is that over the next year, we can kind of refine the illustrations and the messaging and expand the campaign.
I'm chuckling here a little bit, but you know, on the other hand, you're striking at something that's pretty important here. This is a debate about how we manage fire on public lands, and it's a fundamental debate in the Western United States. What do you hope will happen with whatever mascot, you know, you or the public lands on? What's really at stake here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we're hoping to get out of this is that people start understanding that we have agency in deciding what our future looks like with fire, and really getting people to think about ways in which we can steward our landscapes to be better prepared in the face of fire.
Well, and what I think I'm hearing is that Smokey Bear's message that all fire is bad fire and you have to do everything you can to stop it has gotten us into some trouble over the years. And so you're trying to think of something different, a new way of approaching this.
Yes, exactly. So as a result of fire suppression, we have radically changed fire regimes across California. And in many areas, we're seeing a lot of fuel buildup, which is leading to more catastrophic wildfires that we're seeing today. That, on top of climate change, hotter, drier, windier conditions, and the fact that more people are moving to fire-prone locations, is kind of exacerbating all of these risks. Mm.
How does this hit you personally? I know you're a professor, you're thinking about it academically, but I understand you're trained as a firefighter, you've gone out on prescribed burns, and of course, you live in California under all these worsening conditions.
Yeah. I mean, I think as with most people living in California, you know, the last 10 years or so have been really, really challenging. But I'm now doing prescribed burns. So we burn basically every month in order to not only, you know, reduce wildfire risk and bolster healthy ecosystems, but also really importantly to try to promote these indigenous practices across the state.
All right. Emily Schlickman is an assistant professor of landscape architecture and environmental design at the University of California, Davis, also the curator of a new exhibit there about the future of fire. Emily, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Speaking of wildfires, more than 5 months after fires devastated Maui, protesters are camped out on the beach to demand Hawaii's governor do more for people who lost their homes.
It's getting pretty hard. A lot of them are paying mortgages on ash and rubble.
We'll hear from them, and we'll be putting some of their questions to Hawaii's governor. Make sure you subscribe to or follow Here and Now anytime, wherever you listen to podcasts, so you don't miss that episode coming up next week. That'll do it for us today. This show comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Julia Corcoran, Lynn Menegon, and Ashley Locke. Today's editors were Todd Munt and Micaela Rodriguez. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Patrick O'Connor. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin, and the executive producer of Here and Now is Carleen Watson. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.